I am Planta on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. Andreas Aviliotis joins me now. He has just written a new book, Misfit, Autistic Gay Immigrant Changemaker. It's a memoir of a man who has embraced what others might consider challenges, turning those into defining strengths. He talks candidly about being on the autism spectrum, how it affected his childhood as it went undiagnosed for years. He writes about his relationships with family, his experience as an immigrant, and his career as an entrepreneur. He also writes about Canada, his love for it, as well as his advocacy such as inclusion and diversity. Andreas Aviliotis founded the world's first Eco Rewards program, Green Rewards. He went on to create Carrot Rewards, a health and wellness app. He's a classically trained musician who was born in Greece and who lives in Toronto now. He joined me from Vancouver while in town a couple of weeks ago. This new book is published by Doubleday. Royalties from the book are going to 6 Degrees, a global forum on inclusion and citizenship. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program, Andreas Aviliotis. Mr. Aviliotis, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
My genuine pleasure.
What did you do for April Fool's Day this year?
Well, what a year to be interviewing me about this. This was the one year, I think, the only one year in my life that I did absolutely nothing for April Fool's.
Really?
And that's because there's a lot of stress around me right now with my business. And I decided out of respect for my colleagues and for the mood that was going on all around me that I probably shouldn't try and frustrate people any more than I usually do every year.
But as you write in the book, that's a big deal for you and your family, isn't it? That day.
It was actually my almost hippie like mother that had a little bit of a fascination with this day, and she created all kinds of unbelievable pranks which then influenced my prank obsession.
That's the thing that I read with fascination when you write about your parents, and obviously as most parents are to children, influential in their child's life, but your relationship with your parents was unique. They were largely progressive, but there were obviously some tensions that arose as you were growing up.
Yeah, I can talk about it if you want to. A lot of people describe, when they read my book, they describe my relationship with my parents as complicated, and I think that's a very accurate description, because my parents were, as you said, progressive. They were super progressive for their time and place, for Greece or Southern Europe in the 1970s, because Southern Europe is a very homogeneous place, and the 1970s were a very different era. So in that environment, the norm would have been to be fairly regressive and fairly intolerant of anything different. Mm-hmm. Well, my parents had two very different kids. Both my brother and I were on the spectrum. Nobody could call it the spectrum back then, but they knew that their kids were quite different, and that was really making them feel very uncomfortable. The other thing that was very pervasive back then, and to some extent still lives in Southern Europe, is homophobia. Mm-hmm. And my parents, even though they were progressive, they were absolutely terrified of the possibility of ever having a gay kid. So I was the gay kid. They didn't quite know, or they may have had some hunches, but I remember my father so clearly telling me from a very young age that he would much rather have a dead child than a gay child. So you can imagine, you know, that's why I say it was a complicated relationship, because in some respects they were teaching me how to stand out and be progressive and be a prankster and be different. But in many other ways, they were oppressing me without realizing it.
And you know, what you just mentioned your dad saying to you, I mean, if people will read an excerpt of the book, as some have done online, and see that, they'll naturally be shocked. But, I mean, the portrait that you give of your father is more nuanced than that. As you mentioned a moment ago, it's a complicated portrait. One thing that stood out as I was reading the book, you know, your dad had psoriasis, and he partly blamed that on you.
Right, blamed it on the stress,
which was
caused to him by his eventual discovery that he didn't have a choice, that he did have a gay child, not a dead one.
And to give away the book, which I hate to do, but I mean, for people listening to us, I mean, your relationship with him by the time he died, I mean, was that largely resolved, say?
It was mellowed. Yeah. In all kinds of beautiful ways. I wouldn't call it resolved. Some of these things never really resolve themselves. But I'm left with a very beautiful memory of him sort of trying very, very hard to reconcile and understanding how difficult his kid's life would have been as a result of the environment. And he was part of the environment. And again, yeah. I don't consider my father to have not been a very loving dad. He was a beautiful, loving dad and really cared for his kids. But he was a product of his time and his place.
Now, what is writing a book like this? Because, I mean, we've alluded to already, there are awfully difficult moments in your life that you have to contend with. When you say write as you do now at the peak of your life, does looking back at, say, some of the more painful moments, some of the more challenging moments, does that make that easier? Are you relieved, say, of whatever pain you might have felt then?
You know, I mean, you might be shocked to hear this. I didn't write this book for me. I wrote it for a whole bunch of young people who are coming in behind me, whom I don't want to grow up the way I did.
Right.
I'm actually, your listeners might be shocked to hear that I'm not actually an author. And even now when I'm referred to as the author, it makes me feel a bit uncomfortable because I'm the accidental author. I'm a business guy who decided to tell my story because I realized that at least some of my business success came from the fact that I am so different. And so I thought it would be important for a younger generation of folks out there to realize that the things that make us different are actually not things that we should be quashing or should be embarrassed about or should be pretending they don't exist. These are things that we should actually be figuring out how to harness in order to add to our fulfillment. We become successful in whichever way each of us defines success when we figure out exactly who we are and when we actually use our full potential. In my case, I was the autistic kid, the gay kid, the immigrant kid, and I was so, so terrified of all three of those things. I didn't want to be autistic. I didn't want to sound weird or talk weird. I didn't want to be the gay kid and be labeled that way. And I was certainly very uncomfortable being the immigrant who didn't speak with the same accent as everybody else and didn't think the same way as everybody else. And yet all three of those things in the end ended up contributing to my sense of fulfillment in life and to my business success even. Mm-hmm. So why not harness the things that are different about us instead of quashing them?
And so how do you get to the point where you can use those three labels, autistic, gay, and immigrant, on the cover of a book even?
Well, in my case, to be honest, I'm doing it on purpose because I wanted this to be a little bit more in your face. Mm. I wanted to get to a place where labels become liberating, and I do believe in the value of labels. You know, so many people are terrified of labels. I grew up in a culture that didn't want to label anybody as different. And yet, we are all different from each other. And all of us grow up terrified or paranoid of the things that make us different. So why not put the label out there and neutralize that fear, right? By me introducing myself to you as autistic, I'm not going to leave you guessing. And you will not be, and I will also not be trying to not look as autistic. I will be who I am. I've just eliminated any discomfort in our relationship by saying that to you.
I want to touch on the autism part because you just referred to it in the title. You call it your neuroabnormality. And,
right.
And there's such a lesson in the book, Misfit, as to how to cope and go through life and do as well as you have professionally. That was equally important to write about in this book, wasn't it?
Of course, of course. Yeah, and the story I often like to tell is that my social ventures would have never existed had it not been for my autistic mind. Mm. I mean, if you have a minute, I'll tell you right now exactly how quickly this happened. But
yeah.
I grew up as a numbers-obsessed kid because of my autism. My brain needed so many numbers all the time because that's one of my extraordinary skills. And so in order to discover more and more numbers and to be fed numbers all the time, my brain focused on weather and climate. Weather and climate became my most intense and, frankly, most useless hobby. I was the most boring date you could go on because I would sit there and talk to you about the weather in Mongolia over dinner. Mm. And yet, when climate change became a topic about a dozen years ago, I became the first marketing CEO, certainly in this country, to understand it in its fullness, to understand how this huge emerging new trend would actually influence the behavior of billions of consumers around the world. So I had my one moment where I had an advantage over everybody else, and that was the moment where I was able to invent the idea of harnessing the power of incentive programs, point programs like we're all hooked on, mm-hmm. to change the behavior of potentially millions or billions of consumers out there for greener. And so I built a green incentive business, a green rewards business, before anybody else could even think about it. And I am convinced that that would have never happened had it not been for my autistic mind.
Yeah. Well, we all have apps on our phone now, but were you one of those people that say, 5 years, 10 years ago, walked around with a stack of cards in your wallet or in your pocket?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't, but I think you're now referring to my current business, which is the Carrot app.
Right.
And a Carrot app is essentially the granddaughter of the green rewards thing I referenced a minute ago. So, once I realized that the power of rewards can be used so effectively to change the behavior of the masses, my next idea, as the app industry was gathering steam, was to actually create an app that would be focused on wellness, which is such a critical topic for our society right now,
right.
And reward citizens with points when they made wiser decisions, wiser, better lifestyle decisions. And what was interesting about the idea of an app is because now this app is on your phone and it's with you all the time, it can talk to you far more frequently than anybody else. It can be your best pal on your phone all the time. And it has the flexibility of giving you whatever rewards you want. So what's really special about the Carrot app is we don't give you Carrot points. We give you the points that you love already. We give you, theme points or Aeroplan miles or petrol points. So we've created something that literally appeals to every single Canadian or is relevant to every single Canadian and is with them all the time.
And it has proved very popular, hasn't it? And widely subscribed to, right?
Of course. But not only popular, the more important point I want to make, because I always brag about impact.
Yeah.
It's actually made a huge difference. You're interviewing me here in Vancouver, and in BC, the first province where Carrot launched, we have 250,000 British Columbians who are now 21% more physically active every single day, strictly because of this app.
Mm.
And for an autistic kid who was always very motivated to make a difference somewhere in his life, this is such a claim to fame. It just makes me feel so fulfilled when I think about that impact on so many lives.
Yeah. Yeah. The book Misfit also reads like a love letter for Canada, and you talk about how much you love this country and how much it's helped you and shaped you. Pierre Trudeau was a person that you were fascinated by growing up, and the unique thing, and I guess it could only happen in Canada, is that as much as you admired him and wanted to meet him, eventually you got to be friends with his son.
Yeah, and I got to be friends with his son because I wrote a letter to Pierre Trudeau the day that he died, expressing my gratitude to him for two things, for the super inclusive society he had created for misfits like me, but also for his very, very unique leadership style, quirky leadership style, which an autistic misfit like me was particularly appreciating because I felt like him and I wanted to grow up and be like him. Well, that letter fell into Justin Trudeau's hands a few years later, and he called me and expressed how touched he was, and that's where the friendship began. But back to your point about the love letter to Canada, yes, I am probably the proudest Canadian by choice you'll have ever interviewed on your program, and that's because this country made me. This scared, misfit kid showed up here, terrified of who he was, and this country embraced me, because this country embraces difference by default.
Yeah, and proceeds for from this book will fund an organization called 6 Degrees. Were you involved in the founding of 6 Degrees?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I should correct one thing.
Sure.
It's not just proceeds. It's all proceeds.
I see. Yeah.
So every single penny that comes from this book goes to this charitable global project, which I helped create with a few other reasonably well-known Canadians. And the idea of 6 Degrees is to actually fight this ugliness that's emerging in our world right now about fear of the other. The Trump syndrome, as some see it, the fact that people are trying to pit people against each other with fear and anger. 6 Degrees is a conversation about exactly the opposite. It's about inclusion. It's about the fact that we all fit together. And it's a beautiful global project that we started right here in Canada, and we're spreading it all over the world now.
How do you remain optimistic as you are I mean, I read that in the book. I've been talking to you these past few minutes. You remain optimistic despite the challenges that we have in the world today.
Yeah, I don't know. I think I have an optimism gene that can't be switched off. And to end the joking and get serious about it, I actually do think that it might be related to my autism. Autism often makes it difficult for people to fake things, to nuance things very well. I certainly can't fake anything. And so the optimism you're hearing for the last few minutes of this call is very much pervasive. It sometimes drives people crazy around me, but it also serves as my fuel.
Right. There are many goosebump moments, and actually at the end of the book you make a list of them, of all these moments in your life that really are not only turning points, but just fascinating in terms of patterns that one reads. There's one thing that you mentioned in the book that I've been thinking about, is that you actually witnessed a beheading once.
Oh my God, yes.
I mean, how do you find yourself in a moment like that, and how do you not turn away, say?
I know. Thinking back, I still can't believe I did it. I was on a trade mission to Saudi Arabia when I was very young, and a bunch of us were at the Canadian ambassador's home on a Thursday night for a reception for us trade people. Uh-huh. And the ambassador warned us against going downtown the next day, because the next day was Friday, and that's when the beheadings happen in every Saudi Arabian city of any convicted criminals. So when most people in the group, when they heard this, they just cringed and couldn't even imagine going near downtown. I and a couple of others did the opposite. We said, as horrific as this sounds, we're here. We have to experience it. We have to see what a very different society operates like. So we did go downtown. It was the only, I can swear to you, it was the only time in my life I have suffered shock. I remember going back to my hotel afterwards and lying in my bed, staring at the ceiling, unable to move or talk or think. I've never experienced shock before or since.
And it must change your view on life itself, doesn't it?
Of course, in so many ways.
The other thing that struck me as I'm reading the book is the qualities that you have as a person, and I think people should pick up the book just to get to know you. You're one that's got a particular ability to relate to people. I mean, you've attracted a great many friends, have very good relationships with them, and not to mention your family, especially like your brother. Where do you think that comes from?
It might be a combination of that optimism gene I referenced earlier, and my general curiosity. I've been lecturing a lot of young people these days about the incredible value of curiosity, immense value of curiosity. The moment you're curious, you learn more, you connect more, you are appreciated more. Curiosity is almost like opening a window. And as long as you have your window open, you will see many things and you will feel many things, and people will feel you. So I have this endless curiosity about everything in life and about people. So
that's a great lesson for all of us. As we get older, we tend to think we know everything and know everybody that we need to know. But I mean, it doesn't end, does it?
No. And again, it sort of links to why I wrote the book as well, and why I created the kind of title I created for the book, right? It's a bit of a scandalous title when you think misfit. It almost sounds a bit negative. And then I added a whole bunch of other labels on the cover because I wanted to make you more curious just from even looking at the cover. Oh my God, I'm going to read a book about some weirdo, some autistic guy who's gay. It just kind of adds a few more layers of intrigue and curiosity right from the front.
Now, you write in the book about your work, your professional career, and you give insights into, as you have already, about the points business, if I can call it that. Has someone that you worked with at one point, that you were friends at one point, have you heard from him? Have you heard from Brian Pearson, say?
No. There's a whole very honest story in the book about how that friendship ended once and for all. But the only thing I'll say that maybe sort of mitigates the nastiness of that story is Brian, just like many others who have worked with me in the past, didn't quite understand why and how I was different. And again, back to the power and the importance of labels. When you do tell someone that you are a certain way, you, in my case, when when people discover I'm autistic, there's a lot more tolerance automatically built into the system for strange behaviors, because I am strange. And I do say strange things that are perhaps a little too unfiltered at times. But when you actually preempt that by saying to someone, oh, and I'm on the spectrum, that creates a whole bunch of understanding that certainly wasn't there in my relationship with Brian.
It's such an interesting book. I urge people to pick it up for everything that's in it. I've enjoyed speaking to you today, Andreas. Thanks for this.
My genuine pleasure as well.
The book is called Misfit, Autistic Gay Immigrant Changemaker. It's published by Doubleday. Andreas Savilliotis joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.